Good morning, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Dropping the Gloves. I am your host, John Scott. I appreciate everybody joining us. It is Monday morning, April 27th, 2026, and holy hell, the NHL playoffs are in full swing. I'm pretty happy, you know, because as life goes, it ebbs and flows this weekend. You know, we had an interesting situation at home where we were doing our routine Saturday clean, and I just popped my head into the kids' bathroom upstairs in the new house. We're lucky enough that the kids share a nice bathroom. You know, it's got a couple sinks, a couple showers. It's got a nice toilet. It's got a good situation up there. It's a breath of fresh air from us sharing one shower, two toilets for the last 3.5 years at the little house. So the space is good. And having that reasoning going up there, I'm like, oh, they're probably taking care of this bathroom. Like they're probably on top of things. They appreciate the luxury that they have. They're treating it with kid gloves, so to speak. I go up there, towels on the floor, just every light on, every fan on, everything is just disheveled. But to put the cherry on top, I open up, they have two showers. One is a tub shower kind of combo, and the other one is a standalone shower. So I open up the shower curtain for the standalone shower, and I find candy wrappers all over the shower floor. Like, I'm not talking the rogue one that blew in there when they were cleaning up or to someone, it fell out of someone's pocket. No, there's 7 or 8 candy wrappers on the ground of the shower. Like, we're talking Jolly Ranchers and Snickers and the Easter size ones. So not the full bars. So let's relax. It's not that serious. It is serious, but not that serious. And lollipop sticks they just left on the ground. And I'm just like, I just shake my head. I'm going, what is happening up here? And of course, I gather all the kids. And at this point in my life, I'm old. I'm not screaming. I'm not mad. I kind of think it's funny that this is happening, where it's like, okay, like this is not normal. And so I gather the kids, I'm like, who did this? And of course, everybody's, oh, I don't know. As I would say in hockey, everybody's looking for quarters. When you're looking down, you don't want to look the guy in the eye. That's what I would tell guys on the ice. I'm like, you want to go? Let's go. Let's have one. And then they would be looking straight down. I'm like, is there quarters down there? Are you looking for quarters? Look me in the eye. I know you don't want to fight. Anyways, my kids were just not interested in having this conversation. I said, okay. Because no one's coming forward, I know one of you have done this. We were going to have a good weekend. There was a lot of festivities to be had. I said, no one's getting ice cream this weekend. That's how hard parenting I am. I said, no ice cream all weekend for everybody. And I can tell everybody knew who did it because eyes start shifting to certain people. And then people want a tattletale. And in my house, I don't play the tattletale game. So I just said, I don't want tattletales. Whoever did it, you come forward. And maybe we can make good on this. So about 10 minutes later, two kids come up, Gabriella and Sophia, and they go, it was us. The candy's ours. And I go, so what? And I'm just trying to paint a picture for them. And I said, so what in your right mind are you doing eating candy in the shower? So you just turn on my shower, the hot water's cascading over you from the boiler that I put my blood, sweat, and tears into. And you just sit in the shower for 10, 20 minutes and eat candy? Like, what are we doing here? And they just, like, and God bless kids. They stone cold look me in the face and they go, yeah, that's honestly what we do. We take our candy into the shower and we eat it. And it's nice because the hot water and the candy or a lollipop, we just sit there and it's nice. And I go, you can't get mad at them. And I go, fair enough. And I just ask, you don't want to get rid of the evidence? They go, no, the candy wrapper's dirty and we're already clean. So we go on our way. And so I just said, okay, thank you for coming forward. I appreciate it. And I didn't extend their punishment, but that was the end of it. They got no ice cream for the weekend. So I had ice cream. I usually don't have ice cream. I had it Friday night, Saturday night. I didn't have it last night just because I got to keep the beach bod somewhat in decent shape. I got a hockey event this weekend in Toronto. So I'm trying to stay a little svelte on the ice so I can buzz around a little bit with the old guys. Anyways, all that being said, it got me thinking, your life is funny, right? There's certain things you can depend on and rely on. And one is kids being kids. Another one is, you know, them throwing you curveballs and having to deal with things. And another one is just the Edmonton Oilers absolutely being a joke between the pipes. And lo and behold, last night, it happened again. The Edmonton Oilers, must-win game in Anaheim. Game four, they lost game three. So they need to knot this series up. Well, they lose the game in overtime, 4-3 to the Anaheim Ducks. Now Anaheim has a stranglehold on this series, 3-1. And I was looking at the leading point getters for the league. Number one in the playoffs, the Anaheim Ducks young defenseman Jackson Lacombe has 8 points. That's unbelievable. And then it's obviously it's the who's who behind him: Hagel, Dreisaitl, Gensel, Duchesne, Robertson, Kaprizov, the Kucherov, names you would expect there. But Jackson Lacombe, 7 assists, 1 goal. The guy's playing lights out hockey, playing solid defensively. This Anaheim team is fun. But then you start to dig in. It's like, are they that fun? Or are the Oilers just this bad? And I think it's the latter. I think the Edmonton Oilers just bounced and bungled their way through the regular season. They beat the teams they should have beaten. They got waxed by the teams that were better than they were. And then they fall into this playoff position where they, you know, are the favorite to win this series. I have them winning this series. I have them winning a second round series. I have them losing to Dallas in the conference finals. They're a bad hockey team. They are across the board bad at everything. Their power play isn't as effective as it used to be. Their penalty kill is nowhere to be found. Their 5-on-5 play is not, it's terrible, right? Because you're playing the Anaheim Ducks, who are not a threat to win the Stanley Cup, and they're getting exposed left, right, and center. And the thing that stands out to me the most is their energy level. And maybe I'm the only one who thinks this. They act and play like they don't care at all. They don't want to be on the ice whatsoever. They have spurts, you know, here and there, which all teams do. So to say that, oh, they're showing their potential. They, you know, in that, you know, the first half of the second period, that's the Oilers we want. Every team in the entire NHL has spurts where they dominate. Every single one. All the way down to the Vancouver Canucks. They play stretches where it's like, damn, if they could put this together, this would be a good team. And that's what drives fans crazy. That's what drives management crazy and coaches crazy, because you see the potential. What makes teams good is consistency, is doing it shift after shift after shift, not having spurts, not having stretches where it's like, damn, we're good, pat ourselves on the back, and then you stink for a period. Good teams do it consistently throughout the season, throughout a game, throughout a shift. Yes, they obviously have times when they're on their heels. They manage it and they move forward. These Edmonton Oilers, they're bad. They are a bad hockey team. If they were in the Eastern Conference, they do not make these playoffs. But because they're in the Western Conference and they were in the Pacific Division, as Connor McDavid coined the pillow fight division, they slinked into the playoffs and now they're being exposed. And it starts with Connor McDavid right away at the top. And everybody, and here's where I have to put a caveat on this. I know I was a bad hockey player. Okay, I get it. I know I played 9 seasons, only played 300 games. I should have played 800. I had a ton of healthy scratches. I stunk. But I have 2 eyes. And I did play the game. So I think I am qualified just a little bit to comment on this. McDavid could be overrated. In a sense that he puts up a ton of points traditionally. In the playoffs, he's head and shoulders over the last 10 seasons ahead of everybody. In the regular season, he puts up a ton of points. If you watch him play the game, he has a lot of flaws when he's playing this game. Defensively, nowhere to be found. His decision-making is questionable at best when times get tough in crunch time. He throws passes where he shouldn't throw passes. His defensive responsibilities go out the window. On offense, he's a one-man wrecking crew where he doesn't really facilitate. Maybe because no one can keep up with him. But it's a me thing where he just try, and he's not a gifted goal scorer. He tries to burn by, he doesn't try, he burns by people all the time, and he doesn't know how to finish. He took Beckett Senecky to the washer during the third period. That would have been an incredible goal for the Oilers if you would have scored that. But he's not, he is a terrific hockey player. And the amount of pressure that he gets is justified because he's the best player on the planet. But he ain't that good. He's not that good. And I think what we're seeing here play out is, and I want to do a whole show on this because I think it's very fascinating. The greatest player to ever lace them up is not the greatest player ever. Like the amount of skill that he has, God-given talent, his foot speed, his hands, his shot, everything put together, his ability to handle the puck at top speeds. Would you take him with the number one overall pick if you had to build a team? And that's a serious question. 2 years ago, it's a no-brainer. Yeah, of course, Connor McDavid, you know. Yeah, this is the guy. But now, after the last 3 years, would you take him in crunch time? You need a goal. You need to win. You need a guy to go out there and bounce back to make a play for your team. I don't know. I don't know if he's that guy. And it reared its ugly head last night. The Oilers needed a play, and Connor McDavid was nowhere to be found. When you look at the stats, and that's why it was just glaring. It's like Jackson Lacombe, Brandon Hagel, Dreisaitl, Gensel. Where the hell is Connor McDavid? Where is he to be found? This is your franchise player. This is a guy who you need to dominate. He's got 4 points. He's got 2 goals. He's got 2 assists. And he's -6 in 4 games. Sorry, 1 goal, 3 assists. -6. And his 1 goal was a deflection off an Anaheim Ducks player. So he did not even score it. In my eyes, the best player for the Edmonton Oilers is Kasperi Kapanen and Vasily Podkolzin. Those two guys are playing lights-out hockey. They're battling. They're energetic. They're doing everything they can to win this game. Where's McDavid? And Dreisaitl's had a pretty good series, but he's playing with Kapanen and Podkolzin, who are just great. I don't know. I don't know. And then on the back end, Evan Bouchard. I tried to defend him this year, you know, just because I hate when people pile on somebody and they get after him, the whole Olympic debate. Should he be on the team? Should he not be on the team? He's a high-end offensive guy. He sucks, too. In game 3, he was absolutely atrocious. He kind of righted the ship last game. In game 4, he scored that nice winner. Not a winner. Who am I? I mean, nice goal, top shelf. But Bouchard sucks, too. And keep in mind, this is relative to their contract. So when I say he sucks for a $9 million guy. If you were to put him in a lineup with all the other guys making his money, he's the last pick. Well, no, Darnell Nurse is the last pick, but Bouchard is the second last pick. And he doesn't match up with the other guys making the same money that he has. So I don't know. And then I was going to have the big lead in death taxes and the Oilers goaltending just failing them because it's just, but it's low hanging fruit at this point. And everybody knows Connor Ingram. He was a waiver wire pickup. He stinks. Tristan Jarry comes in. He played serviceable. You know, he played decent throughout the game. But again, when you need a save, much akin to Connor McDavid, where you need a play, where you need a goal, Tristan Jarry is nowhere to be found. That goal in overtime was terrible. It's just throwing the puck on the net, trying to kick it down the road, get an offensive zone faceoff, and it squeaks through and it's in the net. There's a whole other argument to be said about should that have been a goal. As far as I know, there was no conclusive evidence that showed definitively that the puck crossed the ice. You couldn't see that white line because the skate was crossing it. But any logical person can use their brain and go, okay, if I can see 3/4 of the puck and the guy's skate blade's way over the goal line, it's a goal. But, you know, the Oilers will be upset, rightfully so, because you didn't see the white over the puck. But Tristan Jarry sucks. Connor Ingram is terrible. And this has not changed. And this is why, once these playoffs are over, Stan Bowman should be fired 100% unequivocally on the spot by whoever is the Tannenbaum's the leader of the Oilers. I don't know who it is. Whoever the president is or the owner is, you march right to his box and you gas him. That's it. There's no reason why Connor McDavid and Leon Dreisaitl and all these guys who went to Game 7 of the Stanley Cup Finals 2 years in a row should have to play in front of a goaltender like this. It's embarrassing. It's honestly embarrassing to have that glaring of a weakness and those studs up front who other GMs would salivate. They're salivating to get these guys. They would kill to have that talent. To not get a goaltender? Somebody. Anybody. And you downgrade mid-season somehow, some way? You find a way to make your goaltending situation worse by trading Stuart Skinner for Tristan Jarry, who has won absolutely nothing in the NHL. And he was the worst goalie statistically when he played for the Oilers for that stretch of 3-4 months. Buddy, you should lose your job. Like, there's no ifs, ands, or buts about this. As soon as you lose that final game, and it rightfully so, could be game five. You're done. All right, moving on. There was a hell of a game last night. Tampa Bay, Montreal. It was a back and forth saga. Montreal jumps out to a 2-0 lead. Tampa Bay looked uninterested. Montreal had all the momentum. The Bell Center was just absolutely rocking. But then something happened. And this is what good teams do. As I was talking about the Edmonton Oilers, you need big players to make big plays. Teams ebb and flow, but they don't play bad throughout the whole game. Just consistently, they play the same way, and they're good. And the Tampa Bay Lightning, I was starting to question them in the first period because Montreal had all the momentum. They were buzzing up and down the ice. These young skaters, they have a full of, you know, they're piss and vinegar. And then you watch the Lightning, and you go, are they even engaged? You know, Kucherov just looks like he's on, you know, a vacation, a Sunday night skate with the boys. Not engaged, just kind of throwing the puck at the net, his power play stance, the way he just carries himself is very blasé. But then you notice they find that extra gear, and the second period starts, and they go, okay, now it's time to go. Now it's time we need to play. And Jake Guentzel starts, you know, really applying pressure. Brendan Hagel all of a sudden has turned into the best players for the Tampa Bay Lightning. Then you got Braden Point buzzing up and down the ice. But you're led by Kucherov. Nikita Kucherov does everything. He's giving you shots after the whistle. He's in your face. He's always yapping. He is turned into, well, not turned into, he's always been the biggest pest, but his game is so rounded that everything he does has a reason to it. Everybody just thinks he's just this lazy guy who chugs Bud Lights. No, the guy has a method to his madness. And last night it was on full display. I was all in to just come on this show today and just trash him, rip him a new one. But then the first period ends, the second period starts, and you just start to see building momentum. He's dishing passes. He's making plays. They're getting power plays. Nothing clicking. But, you know, you can start to see the momentum start to shift. And then the third period starts, and then it's 2-1. Then it's 2-2. And then they finally finish to come back, and it's 3-2. And then you go, holy shit, Nikita Kucherov. He had his hands all over this game. He absolutely played fantastic. I'm not saying he was their best player, but he played a great hockey game. Two guys who made it for me for the Tampa Bay Lightning, Jake Guentzel and Brendan Hagel. These two guys played lights out hockey. And early in the game, when I mentioned Nikita Kucherov wasn't playing that solid and they needed to play, that first goal by Jake Guentzel, when it was 4-on-4, and he single-handedly took it on his back that shift. He enters the zone, couldn't find a shot, comes around the net, drops it to Moser, beelines it right to the net. And you could see it clear as day from, you know, a standpoint of watching on the TV what Jake Guentzel was doing. And what a pass by J.J. Moser. And Guentzel buries it. And it's the end of the first period. And you could just feel, okay, Montreal's in trouble. And after that goal, it was just boom. Tampa, wave after wave after wave. And Dobish played great. And Vasilevsky played great. He had chances against. But these Tampa Bay Lightning, they're a tough out. Even without their big defenseman, Victor Hedman, they play really, really aggressive, solid hockey. They don't give up much in the D zone. They don't get much in the offensive zone, but when they do get a chance, they bury it and they take advantage of their chances. Their power play is not there just yet. Once they figure out the kinks of that, I think they need to be a little more aggressive on their power play, have a little bit more of just get up and go. When you watch the Montreal Canadiens, they're snapping their passes. They're up in that. There's an urgency to their power play, whereas Tampa Bay is just very lackadaisical, methodical, but then all of a sudden it's in the back of the net. But back to Nikita Kucherov, he just lulls you to sleep. And then 5 minutes left in the third period, after Montreal just had this huge 5-on-3 kill, everybody thinks Montreal is going to just get on their horse and away we go. He throws just a random shot on net that nobody would do. There's no other player in the NHL that would make that shot other than like a fourth line guy who's panicking. But Nikita Kucherov gets a pass from J.J. Moser again, and he just rips it on net. A very uncomfortable one-time kind of wrist shot. Hits Brendan Hagel in the back of the net. The Tampa Bay Lightning win this series. They go back to Tampa Bay tied 2-2, and it's anybody's series. But 40 minutes before that, I could have swore Montreal was going to run away with this game. It was going to be 5-1, 6-1. That's the type of vibe it felt like in the first period before Jake Guentzel scored that first goal. It's just the difference between Tampa Bay and Edmonton is glaring with their top guys. You can tell Kucherov cares. You can tell Hagel and Gensel and Point care. Because when you look at the two teams, they're very – I know Edmonton, we slight them for their goaltender, but when you look at the two teams, they're kind of similar. Well, big, big-time high-end talent and then a huge drop-off. The difference is the big-time talent for Tampa is producing, and they have done that for years and years and years. So when it's all said and done in 10 years when these guys are retired and gone and Kucherov's sitting there with two, three, four Stanley Cups potentially and McDavid has none and Draisaitl will have none, who has the better career? Who has the better career? When you look at guys like Joe Thornton and Patty Marleau and Jeremy Roenick and these guys, but then you contrast them to guys who have cups, who would you rather be? Who would you rather, you know, say is a better player? I think, I don't know, I lean towards the people with the hardware, the guys with the cups. So, all right, that's a whole other topic for a whole other show. But let's move on to a couple other series. Colorado got by L.A. It was a foregone conclusion. L.A. tried to play defense. They tried to slow down the Colorado Avalanche. I saw a stat somewhere where their grade-A shots against Colorado were zero. They didn't apply any pressure. Colorado just walked over the series. They dominated. Let's move on to another team that got eliminated, the Ottawa Senators. This was a tough one. I picked Ottawa to win the series. I thought they would come out. Well, I think a lot of people picked Ottawa to win the series. Carolina, after winning the Eastern Conference, still didn't instill a lot of confidence in a lot of people just because of past history of them flaming out when they need to win the most. But the Ottawa Senators, for whatever reason, went into this series thinking they had to be the big bad bully, be the big bad Bruins, come out and punch them in the face and say, we're not going to take it anymore. This is our time. And it bit them in the butt in the first game. The second game, rightfully so, they should have won, but Carolina wins it in overtime. That was the game where they had the goal taken away, and then the Ottawa Senators had all these chances, and the Hurricanes won it with Jordan Martinook in double overtime. A fantastic game, but a game when you look back at the series and you're the Ottawa Senators, you go, gosh, we should have won that game. We had that one. Tim Stutzel had a million chances. Brady Tkachuk had a million, not a million. Brady Tkachuk had a couple chances, and Freddie Anderson stood out his head. Game three, the same kind of playoff where Carolina wins 2-1. The Ottawa Senators have a ton of chances and they just can't capitalize. And they try to play this hard-nosed game. They're gonna hit, they're gonna scrum, they're gonna do all these things. I think they watch the other series and they try to play copycat and they go, oh, Tampa. Like when Tampa gets down, they just muck it up. Like they get in there and they start face washing and they just go after the guys, and that's who we want to be. Oh, the Sabres and the Bruins. Anytime, you know, there's a whistle, they muck it up and they get after it. And they try to play copycat. But that's not the Ottawa Senators' game. I get they have Tkachuk. I get you have Ridley Gregg. But you have Batherson. You have Stützle. You have Giroux. You have all these skill guys. I think it takes away from your team when you're forced to kind of shoehorn that into your game when it's not who you are. Even the guys in the back end, they don't have the most physical defensive players in the back end. So why would you try to make that your game? But anyways, that's what they tried to do. And now they're going home. They're the second team eliminated from this playoffs. They lost 4-2 two nights ago. And it got me thinking. Back when we did this show with Tim, I was always under the impression that the Ottawa Senators had peaked. And this is 2, 3, 4 years ago before they even made the playoffs. I said, this team has reached their ceiling. These guys have been, been in the league for 5, 6 years now. And I don't see them getting any better. They dealt Josh Norris with Dylan Cousins. They made a couple other minor tertiary changes. But yeah, I think I believe that now. When you watch this series, how can the Senators play any better? I don't think they can. Tim Stützle was flying all over the ice. Yeah, he scores maybe here and there to win a game. Brady Tkachuk played good. Like, he was making plays. He was in on the forecheck. He was a very effective player when he was on the ice. They just couldn't score. Batherson couldn't score. Thomas Chabot played good. Sanderson played good. And that's the scary part for the Ottawa Senators. When there isn't a guy to point the finger at, when you look at the analytics and the advanced stats and even the eye test and you go, well, we play pretty good. What do you change? You have to change everything. That's the answer. So when you go in the offseason and you're Steve Staios and you have year-end meetings and then you have the little huddle with all your scouts and advisors and management stuff, I think you have to break this team down. I think it's time to start throwing major, major moves with this Ottawa Senators team. And I said this a few years ago, and I kind of backed off of that because I thought they were taking a next step, and I was wrong, but they haven't. They've now made the playoffs two straight years. They've lost in the first round two straight years. This one was backbreaking because they got swept by a team, in my eyes, they should have beat. Brady Tkachuk needs to go. I think you need to really, really address the goaltending situation. Allmark was really bad throughout the season. He had glimpses in the playoffs where he played solid. I don't think this was on him at all, losing this playoff series. You got to address the goaltender situation. I think the defense is solid, but just across the board, I think you need to address this team. And then I'm sitting there thinking, what Canadian team has their act together? Really? What Canadian team across the country can you look at and go, oh yeah, no, they're good. Starting the West Coast of Vancouver Canucks, they're a train wreck. You get rid of Quinn Hughes this season. You trade JT Miller last year. Elias Pettersson's never happy. You get rid of Horvat. You get rid of all these other stars. It's a mess. When you move a little east, you run into Calgary. They're still in a massive rebuild mode. Edmonton, their star player is not happy. He's pissy and moany. Best player in the world. Can't seem to keep him happy. Drysdale is regretting signing that extension. You've got the two worst contracts in the league on the back end with Darnell Nurse and Evan Bouchard. So they're a train wreck. You keep going. The Winnipeg Jets win the President's Trophy 2 years ago. This year, they were terrible. What the hell do you do with them? You re-up everybody last season when you re-sign Hellebuyck, you re-sign Scheifele, you get Connor to a new contract. What do you do with this team when you have all of those high-end guys on those big-ticket contracts and you didn't even make the damn playoffs? So what do you do with the Winnipeg Jets? I don't know. You keep going east. You run into the Toronto Maple Leafs. It's like, whoa. That's a whole ball of wax in itself. Matthews sucks. Nylander sucks. Everybody's terrible. Nobody's bought into this system. They have no culture whatsoever in that locker room. So where do you go from there? And you keep going east. You run into the Ottawa Senators. It's like, okay, that was maybe a glimmer of hope 5-6 years ago. Fast forward to now. They're a mess. They lose in the first round 2 years in a row. Their captain doesn't want to be there. He wants to go home. He won a gold medal for the USA. He wants to get out of Canada as fast as he can. And there's trade rumors swirling about him. He's going to Chicago. He's going here. He's going there. He's going to trade him for Jason Robertson to Dallas. Maybe that happens. Then you end up with the Montreal Canadiens. Are they the team that now Canada can hang their hat on? Maybe. They got a good group of young players, but are they that young anymore? Nick Suzuki's been in the league a long time. Cole Caulfield's been around a long time. Slakovsky's, he's going to be done with his entry-level contract. You got Hudson, you got Dobson, you got some solid players, but if they don't win this series versus the Tampa Bay Lightning, are they that team to hang your hat on? I don't know. And it just got me thinking even more, like, why is it that not every single captain, the majority of captains on Canadian teams are always seem to be under pressure. They're always criticized in the media, and they always seem to want out. Right? When you look at Vancouver, Quinn Hughes, their best player, he wanted out. JT Miller, as soon as he went there, he, get me out of here. Pettersson has never looked comfortable being in Vancouver. McDavid looks miserable, absolutely miserable. When Matthew Tkachuk was in Calgary, he wanted out. The Winnipeg Jets, Mark Scheifele, he wants to be there, but he's criticized up and down. He doesn't get the due he's deserved. He's one of the best players on the planet, but he should be gone too. Auston Matthews, don't even get me started on Auston Matthews. Brady Tkachuk, he wants to be gone. And then Nick Suzuki seems like he's happy in Montreal. But the majority of captains on Canadian market teams, like, it's not a good relationship, you guys. It's not functional. It's not good. And then you kind of compare that to an American market team when they lose and you look at the captain and you go, okay, what's going on there? And you look at a team like, who just lost out? L.A. Are they coming to pitchforks for Kopitar? Are they coming for Doughty? Are they coming for anybody? It doesn't seem like it. It just is like, ah, gosh, we ran into a juggernaut. It is what it is. We'll get him next year. Or you look at a team like if Tampa Bay loses, they've had down seasons the last 2-3 years when Florida's been on their run. Are they calling for Kucherov's head? You know, is there scathing articles about Gensel in the newspaper? Is Victor Hedman have to deal with these ridiculous questions that other teams have to deal with? Nah, it's fine. When Boston loses to Buffalo, are they going to deal with that? When Pittsburgh loses, No, it's a very only Canadian thing that they have to deal with. So good, bad, or otherwise, that's why players don't want to play in Canada. Like, the highs are incredibly high, but the lows are incredibly low. And then the stuff in the middle is a tick lower. So it's just, I don't know. But when McDavid walks and Matthews walks and Tkachuk walks and all these guys leave and they go, hey, it's a lot better where we're at. There's a reason for that. All right, moving on. We'll touch on a couple more series and we'll get out of here. Philadelphia Flyers, Pittsburgh Penguins. Pittsburgh claw their way back. Poor Stuart Skinner. Just can't catch a break. Artur Shelofs comes in. He plays great. Crosby steps up. They prolong this series. Do I think they'll win it? No. But they're at least giving Sid the Kid another game at home, which is a good thing to see. The Buffalo Sabres, after their hiccup in game two where their Boston Bruins took it to them, they have just went into the Boston Bruins, garden and dominated the Bruins up and down the ice. This game four game, they won 6-1. It wasn't even close. It was over right when they dropped the puck. The Buffalo Sabres are an absolute wagon. They're going to have a great series next round versus the Tampa Bay Lightning or the Montreal Canadiens. It's going to be a fun one. But they will win this series. Dallas, Minnesota. Another overtime game. Minnesota ekes this one out. This is a hell of a series. Everybody knew it was going to be good. This will be a seven-game series. I'm jacked up for it. And then the not so much a surprise one, but the Utah Mammoth, I picked them. So I think I said it a week ago or a couple episodes ago. I actually told my buddy, we were in line trying to get cookies at some event, and I said, hey, I knew he gambles. And I said, listen, well, this is honestly how it went. I said, put some money on Ottawa. They're going to win. And this is before the series. And he goes, oh, the odds aren't that great. A lot of people seem to be picking Ottawa. I think it was plus 155. I don't know what that means. But then we started scrolling down and Utah was at like plus 175. Again, I don't know what that means. I'm not a huge gambling guy. But he goes, they're getting better payback. And I said, oh, Utah will win too. Let's pick Utah over the Vegas Golden Knights. So we threw some money on it. We're going to split the winnings. I think we only put $10 each. So nothing crazy. So don't call the gaming commission on me, but very exciting. Utah up 2-1 on the Vegas Golden Knights. They look good. Dylan Gunther, Logan Cooley. They're very reminiscent, similar to the Anaheim Ducks, where it's just young guys. They have energy. They're on their toes, and they're playing the older team, the Vegas Golden Knights. They're old. They just don't have that juice anymore. And it's fun to see these young kids take over. So I think they're going to finish off this series, whether it's six or seven games. It's a neat transition in the Western Conference to see these guys just taking over the conference. The last, bastion of hope is the Colorado Avalanche and Dallas Stars. But, yeah, those two teams, the Knights and the Edmonton Oilers, they're getting old and they're showing. They're a little long in the tooth, and I'm getting old too, and I appreciate all the support. We'll get another show in on Wednesday. I'm heading out to Canada on Thursday to do a little charity event in Toronto. So if you're in the area, come and say hi. I appreciate the support. And, hope everybody had a good weekend. Better than me cleaning candy wrappers out of a shower, which is always fun. But eating lots of ice cream. So, hey, go get yourself some ice cream. I'll talk to you guys later. Cheers. Don't stop.